Episode.
This is welcome to Chicago, first of all, but this is the voice recorder app on the iPhone, right? So you were telling me about China. Carry on, please, Eric. Go on.
So one of my goals in the very beginning was to be literate, and you know, you look at all the people who try and study Chinese and then go to China, but what I did was I just booked a one-way flight to China. So I quit my job. I worked on Wall Street for a few years, and then I quit my job in April. I had a month in Chicago, and I booked a one-way flight.
A one-way flight?
Yeah.
Are you allowed to do that?
Yeah.
Wow,
one-way... some countries get kind of finicky about that, but China, I just booked a one-way flight. And I didn't book it to Beijing. I didn't book it to Shanghai. I booked it to a city most Americans, I would say, had never even heard of. It's called Kunming. Have you heard of it?
No, and I'm Irish, and I haven't heard of it. How many million people? Actually, how do you spell it? Sorry, how do you spell it?
Kunming. It's
is it north, south, east, or west?
Southwest China. Close to the border with Myanmar, close to where Thailand would be, kind of in that region. Near the Tibetan Plateau, east of it. It's a small city by Chinese standards. It's a capital of a province, so I would liken it to maybe like... St. Louis or something. Some city that if you go to the U.S., you're like, why did you go to St. Louis? You know, or why did you go to this small, typical city? So I started there because I wanted to go to a city where the Mandarin was pretty standard. Beijing has their own accent, and Shanghai has their own dialect. And I wanted to not be surrounded by expats. I didn't want to fall into the bubble. So I went there. The first thing I did was couch surf. So I landed, and the couch surfer picked me up from the airport. And
was the couch surfing information in English, though?
You can go to couchsurfing.org, and it's all in English.
Okay.
And so the people I would couch surf with in the beginning knew both English and Chinese in the beginning. And so they would... So the very first couch surfer, I stayed with him for about 5 days. I landed, and I was like, and I started doing the app on the phone, like learning different characters. And I started with the food, like I mentioned. I wanted to learn the food characters so I could sit down at a menu and have an idea of whether... If you look at a Chinese menu, it's usually about 5 characters for every dish. And if you know each character you learn for food, there's one character for egg, there's one character for chicken, there's one character for meat.
Oh, good. Right. So you could, in a single day, you could learn at least... dozen of your favorite foods.
Yes, and that's exactly it. And because it's such a quick payout, a quick return on your investment, you learn 20 characters in a day, immediately you could read half of a menu. So I started with the stuff that had that quick return. And then I would walk around through exposure. I learned the word for street, because the word for street is everywhere. I learned the word for hotel, because the word for hotel is all the buildings. I learned the word for river. So, and then when I would start seeing characters I didn't know, and I started seeing over and over again, and I was like, I would ask my couch surfer friend, I'd say, I remember one question I asked was, there's a character that looks like three sides of a box with an X in it, and I see it all over the place. It's usually at the end of a string of characters. And he said, well, that means like district. And because I had seen it so many times, it's very different than looking at a book that has 10 characters and you memorize each one out of context. It's because of the context that I found it so much easier.
And tell me, did you just described one there where you got four sides and something in the middle, and
yeah.
And it's a district. And I thought, yeah, that kind of makes sense to me. But is there any correspondence between the shape of a character and its meaning?
There are six different etymologies to a character. One of them is a pictograph etymology. So if you look at the character for bird, which is Niao, it actually looks like a bird. And if you look at the history of that character, it looked like a bird at one point in time. It gradually got simplified into a boxy form, but you could tell that it kind of used to be a bird. The number one is symbolic. It's just a line for one. Number two is two lines. Three is three lines. So there are characters like that.
Right.
But that's only 1/6 of all of the characters. A lot of other characters are more abstract, and so often it'll be a shape that corresponds with a sound.
Oh, wow. Now this is getting interesting.
Yeah.
Shapes that correspond with sound?
Yeah. You might have a... Here's an example. The word for mother in Chinese is ma, and the character is comprised of two shapes.
I think you already have one of these. If not,
I have one actually. I've read it.
Okay.
Yeah, but thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Andy. We're just recording our conversation, but I'll thank you properly when we're finished.
I gotta go.
You're not. Hold on. Hold on a second. We're going to pause the recording, right? And I can't let. Okay, now after an interruption, we're resuming, and Eric, can you remember where we left off?
Yeah, you were asking about the shapes of the characters. So,
oh, yeah, yeah,
so
and the mother. It's about the,
yeah,
wasn't it?
So
the
mother, so way back in the day, just like any language, it was very much oral, and then they started putting, pictographs to it. But they didn't have enough pictographs, so they decided to dispense with pictographs for every single character. So what happened was there was a character for the word woman, which was shaped like a woman, and still to this day is shaped like a woman. And then there's a character for horse, which is shaped like a horse. So there's two different pictographs. They still exist to this day. They look like abstracted versions of the original pictograph. You can see how they, you know how like in Old English, Middle English, New Modern English, the spelling changes a little bit over
yes.
time.
Yes, oh yeah.
The Chinese character shapes change over time like that. So, but the word for mother was ma, and the word for horse is ma, so it's very similar. The only difference is the intonation. So what they would do with a lot of characters, and this is an example, is they would take the horse character to provide the sound to indicate that this is a character that sounds like ma, the horse, and then they would add the woman to give the meaning. So you have a character that is half meaning, half sound, based on the shape of the character. And there are a lot of characters that fit that bill.
Wow. Look, let's not talk only... We could talk about characters forever.
Yeah.
And we talk about the place you went to. You were surfing on a couch when I heard last.
So I went to... I did couch surfing in Kunming and started learning Chinese there. And I spent 3 months between hostels and couch surfing and a little bit of just traveling, too, between cities. I was only in Kunming for that first week, and then I started traveling around near Tibet and then up to Chengdu and over to different parts of South China.
And were you also, in addition to learning the characters, how were you doing with the words, the sounds? How were you doing with the sounds?
So the very first thing I did was I found a linguist online. Who was an American who had studied Chinese, and he put up blog posts actually that basically told the world, he had been studying Chinese for over 10 years at this point, he basically told the world, here's how textbooks tell you to pronounce these words, I'm a linguist, here's how people really should tell you, it's very different. So you know how you look at like a Mandarin phrase book and it says like the pinyin, which is the romanization of how to pronounce things, so ma would be ma, even though there is no ma, and it's just the romanization, just like any other language, like in Japanese. So they would say the J, it sounds like the J and G, but it isn't the J and G. The J in Chinese does not exist. The X in Chinese is not like the X. That sound does not exist in English. The SH is not like the SH in English. But most phrase books assume you're only going to be there as a tourist and that you can get by saying sh instead of sh. You know, there's a subtle difference.
So Shenzhen.
Shenzhen.
The correct pronunciation is?
Shenzhen.
Shenzhen.
Yeah, but the sh, you put the tongue in the back of your throat, it's a retroflex. Shenzhen.
Okay,
But people who don't know that, they say Shenzhen.
Right.
And there's a subtle difference, and it sounds like nails on a chalkboard to Chinese ears.
It's sort of like, you know, there's a place in Ireland, and the name of it is spelled Yughal. Would you know how that is actually pronounced?
Yughal.
Right.
It is Yughal.
And if you call it Yughal, which rhymes with Google, Irish people will wet themselves laughing, right?
Okay.
It's called Yughal.
Okay.
Now, how on earth could you possibly know?
Yeah.
That Yughal is Yughal.
Yeah.
Right? So there must be that kind of a, must be a little like that, is it?
They're, place names definitely have that. You know, if you look at an old map of China, you'd see a city there and it's called Chongqing. Like World War II, that was the capital for a brief period of time, or you'd see Peking. But Peking is a very old, outdated romanization of Beijing. And even Beijing, the Zh, like it's like the Zh in measure. It's not actually how it is. It's that zh doesn't exist in Chinese. It's actually Beijing, and the Z doesn't exist in English. So they approximate it with the zhe like you would get in the word measure.
So to Chinese people, when they hear us saying things like Beijing, do they think, oh, those crazy foreigners, they can't say the word properly?
No, it's probably like we say Paris. Nobody says Paris in, you know what I mean,
okay.
In English.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Probably like that.
Yeah. Wow.
So the very first thing was I learned the pronunciation of every single... I wanted to know from the very beginning that I was getting it right. And when I found this linguist online and I read his blog posts, and then I started listening to his podcast, I knew that I was onto something because he disagreed with everybody else, and he was pointing out sounds that did not even exist in English. So that it removed any doubt that I was getting it. I was getting the shortchanged by people telling me, oh, it's just like J and G. Now I knew. And so I had to practice pronouncing it that way. And so when I started learning very critical words, like the word for bathroom, has three syllables, and every single syllable has one of those sounds that does not occur in English. And so one of the very first sentences or words that I would practice doing, it was like, where's the bathroom? It was a very useful phrase.
An immediate payoff.
Immediate payoff. But the word for bathroom, I had to really practice that word. It took me a long time to say it. Originally it was xi shou jian. But it to do every one of the xi and the shou and the jian, the shi and zhi are all sounds that don't exist in English. And I didn't want to come across saying it the English way, which is xi shou jian, which sounds subtly different. But if I start doing the bad habits, I'm not going to... It's going to be very hard to change that later, and I'm not going to sound very authentic. So getting the tones and getting the pronunciation right from the very beginning was critical for me, and I would sooner say it slowly, perfectly, than say it fast.
And what's your whole day organized around learning Mandarin? Would you speak it and read it? Was your whole day organized around that?
In the beginning, yeah. In the beginning, a lot of it was flashcards. I'd spend like an hour or two just doing that. I was also new in China, so I'd walk around listening to my podcast. If I wasn't couch surfing, if I was staying in a hostel, I would leave in the morning, put in my earbuds, and I would listen to podcasts, and I'd walk, and I'd just go about my day exploring the city by foot.
Are there cafes you can sit down in, and are
yeah.
What we would call resting places to... You know.
There's parks with benches, there's cafes, there's McDonald's over there is like almost like a Starbucks in terms of track lighting and like beanbag chairs. But they have other local places too. Plenty of malls.
So tell me, this way of life, how long was it before you got to a point where you could actually hold a basic conversation with somebody, a simple basic conversation, you know, without...
So I brought a camera, actually,
yeah.
A DSLR camera, and I would videotape myself along the way at different intervals, me trying to have a conversation in Chinese. And the first couple of months were pretty hilarious. I still have those video clips. And in the very beginning, I would try and do transactional things. My first goal was to at least be able to go to the train ticket office on my own and get a train ticket and tell them that I want a hard sleeper for this price, verify the price. They ask for my passport, I give it to them, I verify the time with them. That's a very complicated transaction if you think about it. But once you kind of know the script, it becomes a lot easier. And before I knew the script, it was a struggle. The first 2 months, my goals were to do simple, very simple, basic conversation transactions like master restaurant language.
Could I have some coffee, please?
Master restaurant language, master buying plane tickets, train tickets, hostel bookings. But then I would switch over to being more conversational, and that's when I really, at that point where I switched from knowing the transactional piece and being literate, I decided at that point, I know enough characters now that I no longer need to learn 20, 30 a day. Now if I come across one, I don't know I'll learn it, but I'm going to...
Grass-fed, grain-finished,
I'm going to change that part of my strategy. And that's when I switched more to couchsurfing, leaned on it more, and that's when I did the 90 days no speaking English at all.
You did 90 days without speaking any English?
Yes.
Total immersion?
Yeah, my original goal was, I landed in... So I came back to Chicago for a brief period of time. I continued study while I was here. I actually did a blog in English while I was here.
You wrote a blog in Chinese?
Yeah, it was on italki.com, so I just started doing posts in Chinese, and people would correct them. And so I'd get real feedback on my writing in Chinese. It was very basic, simple writing, like you can imagine what a third grader would be writing. But they would point out grammar mistakes that's very hard to solicit from somebody when you're just talking casually because they don't want to offend you or they don't want to make you feel bad.
Of course, yeah. But in writing, it's actually okay to correct somebody's writing, especially if you know they're learning.
And you start seeing patterns in your writing, and you get to you can even record your voice and they correct your pronunciation.